Pennsylvania County Department of Social Services. May it please the court, I'd like to take just a minute and thank this panel for inviting me to visit the world of subject matter jurisdiction. to my co-counsel, Elwood Sandy Sanders, for teaching me about this neverland between the area where a court has power to adjudicate an issue and the other area where it has power to take certain actions concerning an issue, and telling those apart and figuring out what the consequences are.
I'm so grateful that in the next 15 minutes you can teach us.
That's right. You got a glimpse into our world.
And I was going to add, we feel your pain. So.
And also for his invaluable assistance with the jurisprudence concerning local rules of court, an area of jurisprudence about which I was blissfully ignorant until this case came up.
Well, this one is not a local rule, is it?
Well, we're going to talk about that
okay.
in a second. I don't know. I also want to thank the Deputy Solicitor General, Trevor Cox, for his contributions and additions to this case, which have been helpful to me. And I've used up a minute or two, but I wanted to do that.
Yes, sir.
The fact that the panel raised the issue sui sponte means to me that you're probably ahead of me on the overall question of subject matter jurisdiction in this case. You saw it before I did.
Before you even get into subject matter jurisdiction, void, avoidable, and all those issues, aren't you asking for an advisory opinion?
Well,
I mean, what's the justiciable issue here? What is that? Let's cut to the chase.
Okay. And again, this is a record. I think this is a world record shortest appendix ever. There are no facts in this case. But I respectfully submit that at least in the initial pleading, I wasn't asking for an advisory opinion. I was asking this court to rule that the two lower courts had misinterpreted the statute related to provision of information to CASAS. I note parenthetically the same identical language is contained in the statute that talks about provision of information to jails. So to me and to my client, there's a serious issue as to the proper interpretation of the interplay between the statute concerning confidential information to any information to a CASA or GAL and the limits of the court's authority imposed by 278.
Well, wouldn't that have been triggered by a writ of prohibition, perhaps? If you're correct and the court exceeded its authority, which would have been the JNDR court had no authority, therefore the circuit court had no authority, because if JNDR had none, then circuit court had none. And if that is in fact correct, wouldn't it have been a writ of prohibition along the way? Perhaps. I'm just throwing that out.
No.
I don't know the answer. I'm asking you.
Let me say this. And you use the word authority, and that's the first. I assumed, and I think now incorrectly, that the court had authority to enter the order under 278 and that it was not voidable. I assumed that the court misinterpreted the statute, which made it voidable because it was incorrect application of the law and therefore was appealable. I didn't look at a writ of prohibition. Let me be candid. I, as an attorney for a local Department of Social Services, really don't want to file writs of prohibition against the judge in whose court I'm appearing on a weekly basis.
But in the context of the JNDR court, circuit court, may or may not have exceeded the authority that's provided under the statute, but we can't even determine that if we don't have an actual case or controversy before us.
And that's what this court identified, asked us to file the supplemental briefs on. I'm convinced now after the assistance of Mr. Sanders doing the research, and I think I made a fairly comprehensive argument, and the Attorney General made a fairly comprehensive argument, indicating that in this case, there is no case, that there is no petition filed, and I think I even analyzed whether, because I found out that not all jurisdiction to the JDR court is granted by 241. There's actually, I think it's 283.2, is a grant of jurisdiction which is not contained in 241. So I had to look to determine whether 278 was actually a conferred jurisdiction like 283.2. My analysis, the Attorney General's analysis, is no, it doesn't. It's not intended to confer subject matter jurisdiction. So I think that point is to, you know, this subject matter jurisdiction does not exist in this case because there was no petition filed. 278 does not grant subject matter jurisdiction. That's when we turn, and again, I have to thank Mr. Sanders, to this question of a local rule of court. Local rules of court, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, are they're not codified the way your rules of court are. There's no 12A14 for Spotsylvania County. There are, for example, standing orders of the court that say if you're going to file a motion to amend an order, you must file a copy of the original order. I think that's a valid local rule under 8.014 because it does help the process in applications, but it doesn't. It's not codified somewhere. It's not in a rule book. There's just an order posted up in the window that says that you got to do this.
But the local rules are confined to the bounds of the law.
Correct, and that's where I wanted to take my time today to talk. I think that this order could be construed as a local rule, broadly construed. This is an order saying, in every case, when the CASA presents you this order, this form order that we get from the Supreme Court of Virginia, that you will provide them with the following documents. I think that on its face appears to be a local rule. That's why we cited Collins v. Shepherd and why I want to go back to my original substantive question. If a local rule does not comply with the statute, and that's the language of 8.014, it cannot be in conflict with the statute. And Collins v. Shepherd said, this local rule is not in compliance with the statute. It violates the statute. Therefore, it's a void local rule. I'm going to be very candid with you and tell you that if the court says no jurisdiction, this case is ended and nothing more, I'm going to be going back and I'll be having an order entered in each case telling me to provide the CASA with this, and I'll be filing 50 appeals instead of one. So I'm inviting this court, as the attorney, I've got nothing to hide here.
Invites in quotes.
You're inviting us.
Wait a minute, you didn't want to alienate your judge, but you don't care about us. That's the bottom line.
Well, I don't think my local judge can put you in jail. But I'm pretty sure he can put me in jail. I hope I never have students who listen to this argument. And the Attorney General pointed this out in his analysis too, that there's something inappropriate in having a system where people whose confidential information that information is handed out and they're not even given a notice or an opportunity to say, hey, wait a minute, that's my information. It doesn't go to somebody unless I have an opportunity to speak to it. So that is a part of my brief. You saw it, that Collins v. Shepherd says if the local rule, and I think this broadly construed, could be viewed as an attempt to implement a local rule, if it is not compliance with the other statutes of the Commonwealth, then it's a void local rule. And that's really what I'm asking for. Now, if you have really hard, difficult technical questions about subject matter jurisdiction, I'm going to let you ask Mr. Sanders, because I don't know the answers.
Any other questions? Anything else to add? That's it?
I've told you what I'm thinking and what I'm asking for.
That's fair enough. Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel, and thereafter we'll take up the case of Arroyo versus